Watching Schenectady Today in and around the Capital Region. I'm Ann Perillo, and with me I have Kevin O'Connor. He is the Executive Director of Joseph's House and Shelter in Troy. So tell me, Kevin, what do you do there?
Well, what the shelter does, it provides street outreach, it provides emergency shelter for men, women, and children. And for some people, it also provides permanent supported housing. Folks that folks who've been on the street the longest and also are coping with a disabling condition, and really have no other access to permanent housing. So we currently have about 200 individuals who are living in housing that we provide either 24-hour support for or routine help.
There are that many people.
Well, in the Capital District, there are about 1,500 individuals who are homeless on any given night. And that's a figure that surprises a lot of people in our area.
It seems like a large number to me, that these are people, and many of them are veterans. I do know that.
Interestingly, in our neck of the woods, there aren't a lot, there are certainly some. There are about 7% of the figure.
Okay, so it's not as large as you
think. No, the other figure that would surprise people is the fastest growing demographic of homelessness in our area, in fact, the country, is single mothers with two preschool children.
Living in their car sometimes.
And a lot of times they're paying a lot for rent before all this happens. And
they've just been over their head with they can't pay the bills anymore.
So of the 1,500 people that we serve, we also serve that same amount of people over the course of a year. Our single shelter, we provide services not only in Troy, but also in Albany as well, street outreach and a small housing program. There are 32 individuals. The thing that combines all those folks is that they don't have enough money to afford the rent.
So rent is expensive, and they're putting in more and more housing in our community, right. Whether it's Schenectady, Troy, Albany. Yeah. I mean, I just heard we're Albany now, that 90 state, they're going to be putting apartments in there. Those are not going to be apartments that the average person can afford. They're going to be the more high-end.
Right.
And I see that a lot of these apartments going in are high-end apartments. They aren't for the average person who is just trying to maybe work two jobs and pay the rent.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's been the most significant change. I've been in this field 36 years, and we didn't have the number of people homeless we do today in 1983. And the reason for that mostly is the cost of housing. Housing's gone up fourfold over that period.
Terrible.
And people's wages have gone up about 16% over that period. The lowest quartile of folks, of wage earners in this country, have gone up very, very small.
And the jobs, a lot of the jobs are skilled jobs, so therefore the average person that maybe didn't finish high school doesn't have the skills to get the jobs that pay more money, so they're in low-wage jobs.
Half the jobs that were created in this country last year earned less than $18,000.
A year?
A year.
What do you do with
$18,000? So there's service sector jobs. It's very difficult to make ends meet.
That's poverty. I think $25,000, $30,000 is poverty sometimes when you figure you've got to pay your housing, put kids into school.
The poverty rate for a family of four, in fact, is about $26,000. That's a family of four.
Yeah, that's...
An individual is around $15,000 a year. And it's very, very difficult to find affordable housing. And if you're somebody who's socially vulnerable in our community, somebody with a disabling condition, mental illness, somebody who's coping with an addiction, some people who are coping with developmental disabilities, they're much more at risk for homelessness than any population.
Is part of the problem, because I remember the times when there were facilities that would help people that had developmental problems.
Yeah.
And then there was this whole movement that they don't need to be in a place. If they want to be on their own, they can be on their own. And it kind of threw, at one point, a lot of people on the street who could not cope.
It's been a tragedy that was well-intended. And there was a movement in the 70s, the least restricted housing movement. And that's with the advent of better medications and better therapies.
They don't stay on their medications.
Well, not just that. I mean, the states were spending a lot of money on these facilities, these state hospitals. And there were 93,000 in New York State in the 1970s. 93,000, enough to fill giant stadium. Right? Now there are 4,000.
Yeah.
So we have what's called deinstitutionalization. Yeah. We've moved that population in the streets. So the community mental health movement, the outpatient clinics all started around that time. And the theory was that the money would follow the patients into the community.
Right.
And that's the thing that never happened. I think that with good community-based funding for community-based services, more housing for people with special needs, I don't think that we would have half of the people who are homeless suffering from a mental illness.
I think, and like you say, you've been in this field for 30 some odd years, so you've seen the changes that have occurred. Do you do anything with domestic violence?
We do not have a safe house.
I'm just curious if you had a safe
we
house.
We work with a number of programs.
And we've shown
programs.
Some of the photos up there on
yeah.
the screen.
We work with a number of programs in our community. We do work with folks. We do shelter, particularly
moms. You don't
moms.
Need to duplicate. If you've got another group that's doing this, then you kind of funnel.
And if they don't require a safe house, sometimes their abuser is away, sometimes that abuser is locked up for a long period of time, but then there's the economic reality of dealing with it afterwards.
That they end up being homeless if they've lost the wage earner.
We
something.
Provide the shelter, but we connect them with domestic violence services on an outpatient basis.
Right. So how do you get your funding?
We get funding from everywhere. About half of our funding comes directly from either a federal government, state government, a county government. Some comes passed through the city.
You're a nonprofit.
Tons
right?
of fundraisers, a lot of private contributions, a lot of wonderful individuals, a lot of donated time. We are always in need of volunteers. We have a street outreach program called the HAC Van, the Homeless Action Committee.
I saw the van there. Yeah, we put the screen up there.
That goes out every day from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. There are staff that drives that van and is a case manager that knows individuals that are out there in downtown Albany. But we need volunteers to help prepare meals. We have sandwiches that we give out, 80 sandwiches a day. And we contact at least 35 people living hard on the streets every day.
I can't imagine living on the streets. I mean, right now the weather's decent, so you figure, well, maybe they can manage. But when you look at the frigid cold.
The mortality rate is higher this time of year than, in fact, it is in
really?
The cold. Yeah, because we have safe havens. We have code blue shelters. We have
in
expanded
winter,
capacity.
In the winter, you've kind of concentrated on it.
There have been two deaths in the past 3 weeks in downtown Toronto. Downtown Albany, I'm sorry.
I had no idea.
One at a bus stop in Broadway, another lower Sheridan. Yeah. A woman and a man that couldn't get access into the existing shelters because all the shelters are full.
Yeah. We've been talking with Kevin O'Connor. He is the executive director of Joseph's House and Shelter, and they're located in Troy, and they also work in Albany as well. I wish you well, my friend, because this is a tough area to be working in, and I'm sure it breaks your heart, but you have to kind of step away from it when you see some of the circumstances that people are living in. And what brought them there? Because you're going to hear a story from every one of them.
Every day we hear stories. And what fills my heart actually is the compassion for community, that the volunteers step in, and we have great staff who deal with that more directly than I do in my position at this point, with board of directors and wonderful people that support us, our neighbors. And that's the compassion we need. And that's the compassion we need to ripple out.
Exactly. Well, we're going to see if we can't get this word out. Well, this show is also being aired on the Hudson Mohawk magazine. So that's on WOOC, I believe. So thank you for being here.
Well,
it's a pleasure to meet you. And let's do it again sometime.
I'd love to.
Keep up with it.